Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Dave, founder of Aha Slides, a platform to help you make interactive presentations. Welcome.
Hi, Anna. I'm so glad to be here.
Cool. And, you know, we're not even that far from each other. There is no time difference because Dave is in Hanoi. I'm in Da Nang. So we're both in Vietnam. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's great. That's quite an amazing coincidence.
Fine.
Yeah. Yes, I just came back from a short vacay with my family. It's very good recharge and all refreshed.
Yes, summer is exceptionally good this year. But all right, before we dive into Aha Slides and your journey, maybe you can tell me a little bit about your background and how you got to do what you're doing now.
Okay, so I'm Dev Bui and I founded Aha Slides back in 2019. I have always been a tech person. I love making apps and websites. For as long as I remember, I spent probably half of my adulthood in Australia and the other half in Vietnam. Vietnam was my hometown and I came back to Vietnam about a bit more than 10 years ago. I'm currently calling Hanoi home. Hanoi is a lovely city and enjoying the life here. In 2015, when I first came back to Vietnam, I founded a healthcare platform called VCare for the local market. After 3 years, we sold it to a strategic investor in Vietnam. I took a bit of a short break, and then in 2019, I founded Aha Slides, and we've been around for 6 years. We now have a team of over 50 members, and we love what we're doing. With Aha Slides, we are fortunate to have a global user base. We have customers coming from all around the world and we're learning new things from them every day, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty great. And now knowing that, you've sold your previous business, are you building this one with an exit in mind or you're just building it to last?
Actually, not quite. I didn't really have an exit I didn't even think about, the happy ending when I started it. When I first started, I was like, I think the world looked quite simple. We wanted to build something to make meetings and training and presentation more fun and less sleepy, less boring for everyone involved. Because as a founder and as someone who led teams, I run into the problem of feeling like, am I speaking too much? Are we having too many meetings? Are we having too much training? And even though it's important for a team to come together, you don't want to waste everyone's time. You want the shared time spent together to be meaningful. So we set out a very simple goal of providing leaders and trainers and presenters with a very simple tools to make training easier and to make it easier for everyone to be engaged. Now, I know that you, as a leader or as a trainer, you're supposed to be captivating, right? But then not everyone can be a Steve Jobs or a Barack Obama. I mean, it takes a lot of skill and we want to make engaging easier for everyone. And it starts with a very simple action of asking question and answering question. And we make us like to make asking question and answering question easier for everyone involved.
Okay. So you started talking about, the way, leaders work and the way team is engaged with their manager. And I think one of the core kind of red thread going through your LinkedIn posts is about leadership and how you've been evolving as a leader as well. And because it's not your first business, I also wanted to ask you how you've realized you are still working on it, your own leadership style. I think you mentioned a few people and companies that you got inspired by, like Pixar and Alex Ferguson. So what exactly have you been learning from that? And what's your leadership style?
Can I pause a little bit? Do I look blurry to you?
It does look a little bit blurry, but it should be fine when this is live, because sometimes, because of the connection fluctuation.
Does it have something to do with the blue filter that I'm turning on River Cycles? I can turn that off because I think sometimes I look sharp and then I look blurry. See?
Oh, yes. So, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Now you look sharp. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Then maybe turn it off. Okay. That would be
But
better.
actually, I don't think I can. There's no option to turn up. I've been looking for it on the interface, but I don't see it anyway. I think I probably need
Okay.
to join again.
Yeah, it will cut it. Maybe if you just stay like this, a little bit
Yeah.
closer, that would be great.
Okay. All right.
All right. That's awesome. Thanks.
Okay. But shall I go to answer
Yeah, you can just
straight away?
answer.
Okay. I think that's a big question. It's super interesting, but I think the topic of leadership is a very big topic. And I personally love the art of leadership. And that's not only for me as the leader of the company, but I think a lot of our users, a lot of our customers came to us live because they are having somewhat of a leadership problem. Because I think leaders are the ones who care the most about engaging their teams and making sure they want to make sure that their meetings are purposeful, meaningful, and motivating for everyone involved. So I spend a lot of time speaking to discussing with leaders and of course learning from books and from podcasts about different leadership style. And well, obviously there's a lot of leadership style to choose from. You have Steve Jobs style, or do you have Alex Ferguson, or do you have leaders, or do you have the Pixar style where everyone is involved? I think probably one of the biggest lessons that I learned from all of that is that to be an effective leader, you have to be agile, you have to be adaptable. And there are different leadership style, and you gotta know which one to utilize, which one to apply in different situations for different people, different team. So you have to be flexible, you have to be agile. I think that's probably my biggest takeaway. You gotta have strong principle, make no mistake, because as a leader, you gotta stick with your principle, but you should not have a fixed mindset, if that makes sense. So I'm always telling myself that I should be agile, but then at the same time, I should not have a fixed mindset because things change, people change, and the game change all the time. The second takeaway I got was that, and I think this is one of my principle, and I believe that it's true all the time. People generally want to be part of a great team, and they want to do meaningful work. And as a leader, you must never lose trust in that. When the team is not working very well and it's not performing, never forget the fact that people want to work, they want to contribute. And you should start with yourself and ask yourself whether you're giving them a good goal, a good mission, whether you're having the right setup for the team to flourish, whether you're spending enough time with each team member individually and then the whole team collectively. And sometimes it's easy to be cynical, sometimes it's easy to lose focus and to be impatient. But you've got to repeat and to yourself that people they do care about being a great team and everyone want to do meaningful work. Never lose trust in people. So I guess those are two of my principles when it comes to leadership, being agile, and also have trust in people.
That's awesome. I really like the second one. I mean, first one, I feel like everyone wants to be there. It's an easy one to forget, though. But with the second one, it's just a little more difficult because, especially when the team grows and it's a bit more difficult to navigate, like who's who and who's involved in what. But I think you're absolutely right. This kind of fundamental trust that the person that came to work for you does want to do good work, contribute, make their own contribution meaningful. I think that's really good to remember. But tell me a little bit more maybe about the team culture, because I think when the last time we talked with you, you were saying that the team is growing and it's basically like a large scale scrum combined with a lot of team autonomy. So I'm wondering, with the scale up, how do you really balance this, ability to be to have this alignment on the goals, but also a lot of freedom?
Our product team is split up into five different sub teams. So four sub teams focusing on building new features and building core features for the system, and one infrastructure team. We have a very strong emphasis on team routines. So we have a set of routines that we adhere to, and we make sure that everyone respect the routines. The routines are more important than anything else. Everyone has their own flexibility, but then you've got to respect the routines, such as daily stand-up, weekly retrospective, sprint planning, and so on and so forth. So we do improve the routines, but at the same time, when we agree that this is a routine that everyone's got to adhere to, then we stick to that. And it makes syncing up a lot easier when everyone working under the same rhythms. So sometimes there's misalignment, but you know that at the next checkpoint, we're going to have some time to work out the differences. So I think that's the rule number one, which is to have routine and we don't break that routine. Everyone has to follow it. We also spend a fair amount of time investing in having better tools for team to work together, monitoring tools, syncing up to automation tools so that we can roll out changes or new processes or communication easier. So one of our routine is retrospective, and we during that time we will discuss about how we can improve our tools and automation and monitors and everything so that we can work more effectively together. Also, we have training. That's also another routine where we keep sharing new knowledge and showing what one team has learned, sharing all the problems and issues and everything that we found and learned along the way. And with all of that, we build a system of feedback loops for everything we do, because I think it's more important to have the right feedback loops than to set the correct goals. Because goals change, strategy change. They change on a quarterly basis, even on a monthly or even on a weekly basis. But what is not changed is we must listen to feedback and react quickly to them. So for everything we do, we would the first question is, okay, so this sounds great, but how do we set up the right feedback loop so we know that once we commit or come into it, we know we are on the right track. And we keep on improving the feedback loop because it seems to solve all sorts of problems, not just decision making, but also motivation, also changing people's behavior, changing people's habits. It all starts from having the right kind of feedback loop that everyone can see and everyone can get something out of it quickly for whatever they do.
Awesome. And you also have some team building activities. I saw it in one of your recent posts. So that looked like a lot of fun. But I think it's also like a very, very cultural thing, because here in Da Nang, it's very popular for teams, companies have their team buildings at the beach. And it looks incredible. They're just there to have fun. They have like bouncing castles and, you know, all kinds of activities. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so cool, because there is no work involved. It's just fun. You're just unwinding with your peers. It's, looks awesome. Do you guys do that too?
Yes. So we went to Quy Nhơn around 6 months ago. So we do take a full advantage of the fact that Vietnam has a very long coastal line. So there's a lot of awesome, beautiful place to visit and to spend great time together. So we do that occasionally. And sometimes in Hanoi as well. Like this Friday, the whole team is going to the cinema to see a movie together. I think that those sort of experience really help to remind everyone that there's other aspects in life than work. And it's great to be around people who you share a wide range of experiences with, not just work discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, in this kind of remote everything, and everyone is being like in different countries and teams are really dispersed, you guys chose to have an office. And as again, judging by our previous discussion, it does give you a lot of advantages. Maybe you can tell the audience a little bit about that, but also a bit of a disadvantage for those that you try to hire for hybrid or even remote work. So maybe you can tell the audience a little bit about both aspects that you are dealing with.
Yeah, so the good thing about having an office and having most of our team being in the same city, so we can access the office at the same time, is obviously we get to have a lot of shared experience together. We are a hybrid team, so everyone can work from home for certain days in the week. But we also have a lot of routines where we do that together. I think the biggest benefit of that is that we get, as I said, we get to be present together in this same shared space. We have shared experience. And I mean, I think, I do believe that we are all social animals. And even the most introvert ones still need to have a strong sense of belonging. And we, when we are together and we do things together, I think that's really helped to build that strong sense of belonging. And you cannot have a well-aligned, well-motivated team if everyone doesn't feel like they strongly belong to that team, be part of the team, part of the pack. Yeah. So being together really helped with that. And even though nowadays you can pretty much hop online and see everyone clearly in full HD, I think being together also means that you get to experience things together, do physical activities together. Like in the office, we get to play table tennis, we get to eat together, we have to play board games together. And I think that sort of thing really helps in bonding the team. And sometimes work can get a bit intense, but then we can say, hey, let's go have a game of ping pong and work it out on the ping pong table, things like that. That's a lot easier to do in the office compared to doing remotely. I think working remotely from home obviously offer a lot of advantage as well. Like on days of the week where we really need to focus, a lot of team members will choose to stay home where it's a lot more quiet, because in the office it can be distracting and not everyone enjoy, you know, being socializing all the time. So I think working in a hybrid setup give us the best of both worlds. Then we do run into a problem, as you just pointed out. When we want to hire someone who comes from a different city or different country, it does create a barrier. And that barrier is even more striking when that team member join in the same meeting with the rest of the team who were in the Hanoi office. Because it's extremely hard to not feel left out. So we do have certain rules, like when everyone in the same room, in the same physical room, and someone online hasn't joined yet, we try not to talk about work at all. Because sometimes you just want to start before that person joins it. But then by doing that, you kind of leave that person feel like they're being left out already. Or when the meeting is over, when we walk out of the meeting room, we try not to talk about work. Because we remind each other that, look, if we do talk about work now, they can miss it completely, because we just agree together with him that, you know, let's work on this and that. So we need to be very mindful of it, but it's not easy. But sometimes, you know, the internet gets choppy or things, people prefer to speak directly with each other in the office. So it does pose some challenges for us. So I guess there's no, you know, you cannot have everything. So yeah. If you build an entirely remote team, then it's a lot easier to expand. And maybe once in a while you come together and and do something nice together in person. But then if you're in the same city, yeah, being able to see each other on a weekly basis, that also really helps to build team chemistry, especially through tough time and uncertain times.
Absolutely. I mean, I can totally understand both. I'm the only person in Vietnam from SaaS Group.
Yep.
So I'm very far from everyone. And, you know, that's the aspect that I absolutely love about remote. I mean, I can be anywhere. And I want to be close to the beach, let's face it. But I value the time when we're together so much. And every time I travel, I try to pack different cities and seeing different teams and making sure that I am in the loop, because you're absolutely right. It does sometimes feel like you're not there. You don't see the full picture, and you don't, let's be honest. It's very difficult to like be completely in the loop. So I think one thing that you mentioned is also kind of related to that, and it's hiring a sales executive, and you wanted to add a bit more of a sales motion, especially on the global scale, to a Hustlites. So can you tell me a little bit more, like, what is growth looking like right now and why you felt like adding this person with a global experience will be better and how it works.
We're actually hiring multiple roles for our go-to-market motion. Over the last 6 years, I think we have been mostly product-led. So we focus on having and building an awesome product, and we rely on channels such as SEO and ads and so on for traction. As we try to move a bit upmarket and we want to build longer, more sustainable relationship with organizations, because ultimately we want to help organizations to engage better as a whole, there's certain area where I don't think you can completely sort out by relying entirely on product led. For example, you need to provide accountability to your customer, to them, and you need human for that. That's accountability is not something that you can simply build into the product. You need to have someone to answer phone calls, to fill out forms, to have demos, to prove to the customer and to take full responsibility for all the commitment. And that's the kind of thing that you need to have sales, and you need to have a team, and you need to step to the front line and say, hey, speak to us. Because we can be accountable, and you can go with us. You can trust us with your data, with integration, with your entire organization. So accountability is one of the things that I think is very hard to achieve with just product-led growth. And customer and enterprises, they need that. Another aspect is, for large organization, you sometimes need to help the customer to navigate his own organization, because there's so many decision makers, so many potential blockers. And that's something that you cannot solve with a clever user interface. You sometimes need to speak to them, and sometimes you need to sit down with them and figure out why their procurement request has not been approved, why their IT admins are raising certain concerns. That's when we also realize that we need to rely on sell-led growth, because we need to help our end users and our customer to navigate their own organization to fully onboard everyone. So I think those are the two key aspects where if you want to move up market, you need to solve. And I think having a human team would work, that interact directly with the users and with the customer, would work a lot more effective than relying entirely on the tech. But make no mistake, the product has to be good. So it's not a choice of PLG versus SLG, but it's more like, let's do both. The product has to be good, but then you also need to have accountable persons to step in and help the customer out.
I think just to this point, I think I had just recently a conversation with a fellow marketer who was working as an interim CMO at a company. And he wasn't the first, the second, or the fifth interim CMO. And they've been trying to find their motion, the way to grow a company. And they were like, okay, this marketing doesn't work, and this doesn't work, and this doesn't work. And eventually, the realization that came very late, because they ultimately had to close the company, is that no marketing or no sales is going to help if product sucks. And and they did not invest in product for a while. And he was like, oh my God, if I had a penny for every time a founder would push me to do more marketing or better marketing or different marketing, he would realize that the product is horrible to begin with. It would be a millionaire. So I think it's like such a tiny, but very, very important thing to remember. Focus on product first.
Yeah. Yes. Always.
PLG should work.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
It's okay. Yes, I totally agree. I think that's the fun part, but also probably the hardest part about growing a SaaS from early stage to something a bit bigger. Because I don't think you can be successful with a bad product. And then there's a certain point, you need to learn and be more serious about sales, about go to market, and all the other things as well. So basically, you have to do everything right at the same time. And I don't think there's a simple formula for all of that. You got to do everything right and keep on trying.
Okay. And why are you focusing right now on the global market? Like, where is your usual customer from right now?
So our customer, interestingly, they have been all over the place. So they've been all around the world. We have users and customers from pretty much all the countries that I know of on the world map. So that has been both a blessing and a curse for us, because we, thanks to that, we have a very robust user base. But then at the same time, it's hard because people are different. You know, countries, the cultures, they're all different. So from day one, we knew that we have to have a global knowledge and global understanding of all the different markets for us to grow. We are now at a stage where we want to build stronger relationship with enterprises, with organizations. And one important aspect of that is to create a human relationship between team members at the Hasli and members from our customer, from our client organizations. So that's why we are looking for team members from all around the world to build that kind of relationship. You got to be close to your customer, right? You got to be in the same time zone. You probably want to have local knowledge as well. So I think that's one important bit of building trust. Trust doesn't come from nowhere. It usually comes from familiarity, from have a good understanding of the customer problem and their work. And that is something that we realize that we are learning, but then we also want to acquire that kind of knowledge by having team member with diverse experience and cultural background.
Okay, that makes great sense. Okay, well, it's no surprise that I'm going to ask you about AI, right? And I think it's yesterday or the day before that I saw another LinkedIn post or something that said, okay, you don't have to spend hours preparing your presentations anymore. There is AI. You click a couple of buttons and it's done. And I wonder, first of all, what do you think about AI? Like, how visible is destruction to you just on a kind of global scale? But also, what does it mean to a Hasli? Like, what do you feel? Are there any customers that say, yeah, okay, well, somebody said I can now just press two buttons, so I'm leaving. Does it happen?
Not quite. I think AI is definitely changing the way we work. Everyone in the SaaS world can feel the impacts of AI very clearly, and the impact is twofold. It's on our product and on the way we work. So on our product, the question is, how do we take advantage of all the great advancement of LLMs and build AI-enabled feature on the products? And also internally, the way we work, how can we boost productivity? How can we write more code and make more articles and so on? I think from what I have learned and what I've seen, I think AI has really been really helpful with a lot of tasks, but it would be an illusion to think that it can solve a complete job for you at this stage. Because it's good for creating simplistic demo or solving small tasks, but for complex tasks and projects, collaboration, you definitely need people. So AI is more like a tool, and you still need to learn how to use it. And an unskilled user will still not be able to produce good results, good outputs. And it can be even dangerous, because usually the output from AI would look very well presented. But then, provide it with good input and validate the results, and have human in the loop as well, then you likely end up with crappy results, especially for sophisticated problems.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
And there's a joke from a friend of mine I really like. And he said that AI cannot go to prison for you. Humans go to prison. So until that day hasn't come when AI can go to prison, so we're still going to need human. And the takeaway from that is that for high-stake tasks and jobs, we need accountability. We need people for that. Accountability is something that only people can provide. So I don't think to say that AI can replace like a whole team or jobs, I think that's a very simplistic way of viewing it. I think it's more like it sounds like salesman talk, and it's a very powerful tool, but ultimately it's a tool and you need to know how to use it, and it won't help if you don't have the skill and experience required. It's not gonna help you solve that lack of skill and experience problem.
I asked that question on one of my other podcast episodes, and the founder said, yes, of course, you know, some customers left, but it was the customers that, you know, were on the lowest plan. They were paying, let's say, $9. And basically, that's exactly the value that they were getting from the tool. You know, they were using some very basic features, and they left because, yes, those tasks that they were doing with AI, they were doing with their tool, can now absolutely be solved with AI. But people who are on higher tier subscription, they never left because that complexity still requires a person or still requires some more sophisticated tool and yada, yada, yada. And so I'm wondering, have you lost any customers to AI as you know of? And what did they tell you when they left?
I don't think that we lost any customer to AI. And actually, I think the risk is quite the opposite. That if we got too excited and we throwing AI feature to our customer, then we actually might lose them because of that. Because I think last year when AI first came to the scene for a year or so, we was very eager to put AI on everything we do. Like when a new user come in, we will show them a huge, you know, input field so that they can type in something and speak to our AI. But the output that our AI produced was most of the time underwhelming. I mean, it's impressive for someone who is not serious with the product, but for someone who actually had a presentation or a series of training session to run, they expect something a lot more intricate, a lot more advanced, a lot more sophisticated than that. And usually that involves them spending time working on the slide and creating content as well. So if we give them a false premise that AI is going to solve the entire problem just by uploading a document and writing a couple of prompts, then we might end up, and we actually ended up disappointing some customers for that. So I think you've got to be careful about not over promising what you can do.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. So how are you bringing AI into your workflow? Like, what are you trying to automate, or maybe are you using it for marketing at all?
So internally, we've been using AI quite a lot. I think most AI models nowadays are extremely good at searching for information, also from analyzing content, finding that missing piece of content. So internally, we integrated AI into our internal communication tool, into our internal knowledge base, into all our internal database and system. And that greatly helped our team to reduce the time for searching for past decisions and information. It actually saved a lot of time for decision making as well, because previously to make a decision, some certain decision regarding products or marketing or sales, may take a couple of days for someone to prepare all the relevant data and pull out the right reports. But nowadays, that can be solved in 5 to 10 minutes with an AI agent diving into our data. Obviously, all the output of AI should be validated by human staff, but it saves a lot of time when it comes to searching and aggregating information. I think that's the thing that AI does best up to now. Also, with regard to marketing, AI is good with, you know, polishing your writing, checking for errors, and so on. So that saves a lot of time with content production and also for learning into new area. I think AI is a new Google, right? It saves a lot of time. Instead of having to click through all the links, you can get a quick look of the markets or have certain research questions that can, that's another thing that AI can, is really helpful. But again, you've got to validate the results. You've got to cross-check it. Yeah. But internally, we have been integrating AI into a lot of tools and haven't looked back since, because it's working quite well for us at the moment. One thing we did very early on is we focused on having human in the loop discussion. Like if a staff chat with AI, then other staff can join in and provide extra information or step in to say, oh, hey, actually, this is not correct. Be careful, and so on. So we have that open setup so that everyone can be involved, and we train our AI and we improve our AI agent as well.
So all right, I think so that's something you built internally. Helpful.
Yeah, we build internally for discussion, for marketing tasks, for coding and tech tasks as well. So we make sure that it's not a one-to-one, one human and one AI working privately, but it's more like collaborative effort where we have multiple staff working the same conversation with AI. And with AI, we have multiple agents as well. So sometimes for certain tasks, we pull different agents in to see which one performed the best.
Okay. What are other team favorites in terms of AI? Any tools that really popped up?
We have a team internally that produce new agents almost like every week now. So we keep rolling out internal agents. And one thing we learned was that if you assign too many responsibility to an agent and give it too much knowledge, then the probability of hallucination is a lot higher. So we've been splitting the things that we do for into different kind of areas and have different agents specialize in different kind of tasks. But yeah, internally, I think we're having quite a lot of different agents now for different tasks.
What about external tools?
I still know we have been improving our AI features on HowSly. I think there's some big questions when it comes to product design that we are trying to answer. And for example, whether we should focus on improving our embedded action on the user interface, or whether we should give our user a kind of like a chat experience when they can discuss the entire project or the entire job to be done with our AI, and then put the user interface as a secondary factor. So sometimes you might not even need to see it until you check the results. So there are different ways to go AI native, and we are actually trying to experiment with as many variations as possible to see which one would work best for our customers. I don't think there's a right design, a right formula yet. Because there's still a discussion going on about how to integrate AI meaningfully into our product. And
yeah,
you got to be careful, because if you get too excited, then again, I think a lot of users are put off by the fact that there's too many AI buttons all across the user interface. And our data also show that slapping a feature with an AI label doesn't automatically improve user adoption. Sometimes it's quite the opposite. Actually, some people, users, they kind of already lost some trust in AI. Maybe they have been disappointed by AI features in the past. But some people, users actually prefer to do it manually in their own way. But then at the same time, we don't want them to spend too much time on laborious tasks. So we always try to find angle and we can help to save them time. So it's an ongoing process. And I think it's super exciting, because you don't know how your user interface is going to end up a year or 2 years from now. But you just know that it's going to be quite different from what we are used to.
I heard one opinion, and I think it totally depends on who your customer is, but a founder told me that now they even stopped putting this AI label on a new feature because everyone kind of expects it's AI. And what would be surprising if it's not AI? So they're like, yeah, okay, everything's AI now. So we're not even going to bother because it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't really add anything anymore. It's just a given.
Yeah.
All right. So what's the most exciting thing for AHA Slides for the next 12 months?
Overall, our mission has not changed. We want to save the world from boring meetings, sticky trainings, and two-now teams. One gathering at a time. And we want to achieve that by making the whole process easier and making the whole experience more reliable for everyone involved. So that mission hasn't changed. The way to what we do to achieve that mission is something that we review and we adjust on a monthly or even on a weekly basis. I think AI has kind of inspired us a lot. Rethink the way we design the product, rethink our value, our positioning. And I think a year from now, I would like to see product as something that is friendly for both users who are super busy and just want to type in something simple and want to get the complete job done so that they can start on their meeting without thinking much about it. And it should still work well for users who want to have a high level of control. So they can still control their meetings, control their training, and deep dive into certain area of the content. But for in both cases, I don't want our customer having to spend too much time interpreting data or searching for information. That's the kind of thing that our product should be proactively worked out for users. And that's the area when I think AI can really step in, where, you know, when you open us, like after a series of training, you should be able to have all the recommendation and all the next step working out for you. You should be able to have all the feedback from your participants. You should not have to do a lot of manual work on a lot of works that require a lot of mental load. So you can focus on thinking about the strategy, about what you want to do with your team, with your classroom. And hopefully you would want to take care of all the administrative tasks for you. And that used to be like a huge task for a small team to do, I think just 3-4 years ago. But nowadays with AI, you got to think about that because the opportunity is there. You have a very powerful tool that is very context aware, that is extremely adaptive, and that is very smart and it can solve a lot of problems that you don't even anticipate when you integrate it into the product. So you've got to take advantage of that. And the expectation from the market is, I think now it's already also a lot higher. People expect software to be adapted to their problem. They won't spend too much time figuring out complex interface and spend a lot of time on data entry and setting up anymore. People expect things to just work and understand them. With a couple of prompts and maybe sharing some documents and integration, the system should be able to figure out what is your outcome, your end goal is. And the customer would expect some tangible improvement by using your product. So the bar is a lot higher, but I still think that there's still a lot of room for early stage company and small SaaS company to provide a set of offerings that cannot be easily replaced. Customers, they want reliability. They want accountability. If they invest in you, that is because they want their events or their tasks to be done right. Right now, I think all the general purpose AI cannot provide that kind of warranty. So I run into very small micro SaaS that did all that very well. I mean, even though they just solve a very simple task for very small task in the workflow of their customers, but the way they do it will give you a strong sense of relief because when you use that micro SaaS, you know that things cannot go wrong. And of course, you can save some money by vibe code it or by build something and with AI to work around that problem. But you would not have that same level of reliability and accountability especially if that's a serious workflow or a serious task. So I think there's still room for SaaS companies to solve narrow problems really well.
Do you think that's maybe what agents are trying to solve? So all the really tiny SaaS companies that, not in terms of size, but in terms of a problem that they are solving, something super specific, agents is what is trying to replace that.
Say that again, agents?
Do you think that maybe agents is the thing that is trying to replace that?
Yes and no. I mean, agents, if they are narrow enough, then yes. I think specializations is required for reliability and for consistency. So I think there's a balance there somewhere. But what I'm saying is that I think there's enough use cases and tasks and problems in this world for company and for startup teams to pick from and to solve. And that could be an AI solution, that could be a software solution, and most likely it'll be a mix of both. So you have traditional user interface and traditional software, and you also have AI as part of your solution. Yeah. I think that's what it's going to look like in the next couple of years.
Yeah, like you said, it will be really interesting to, you know, have this conversation again in a year and see how you guys look and maybe, you know, how it changed just on a global scale. But all right, I just have a couple more questions. So, you know, over the last 6 years with Ahaslides, what do you think, reflecting on everything that's happened, what has been your biggest win, biggest failure? And can be for you as a founder, CEO personally, or for the team or the product?
Wow, that's a big question. I think in terms of wins, and that's one part of our culture is to celebrate small wins. So we celebrate wins on a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis, but we celebrate wins whenever there's a win, no matter how small it is. So there have been a lot, hundreds, thousands of little wins that we celebrate every day. If I have to share with you one remarkable win that we achieved, I would say that would be my team. We have a team who share the same vision, same purpose, and we genuinely enjoy what we do. We have team members who have been doing this for as long as I did, 6 years. And we have new team member who just joined in a couple of months ago. And we all share that same sort of sense of mission. We love what we do. And I think we are fortunate enough that our product is something that can be quite easily observed. So we can see the impact that we make on people's life. Because usually when people have a successful meeting, they would share something with us. They would share something on social media. They would say, hey, thanks to you. We have really fun training and so on. So we love seeing that kind of thing. But yeah, I think probably one of the wins that I'm most proud of is my team. We managed to have a strong team that believe in the same thing and work on the same thing.
That's awesome. Any failures?
Oh, there's a lot more failures than wins. Well, we, as a startup, we made a lot of assumptions and a lot of them turned out to be wrong. We have a lot of decisions that turned out to be suboptimal. So there's a lot of that as well. I think maybe one thing that came to my mind right now is, you know, during the COVID and pandemic, COVID and post-COVID years, there was a time when everything went up. If you run a SaaS company and you have a tech solution, people would come to you. So adoption was really easy. Traction was really good. And that was a good period for us as well. We saw explosive growth and so on. But now looking back, I think we kind of did not utilize that window well enough because we saw things going up very well. And then back then, I think we should have invested more into fundamental things like our core system, our growth engine, our vision and so on. Back then, we made, I think, quite a lot of short-term decisions that later on we realized, well, if we invested in something more long-term back then, it would be the best time to do it. The market was very open and very receptive to everything you built. So now a lot of things that we do now, it takes a much longer time to be picked up. So I think we kind of miss that window a bit. So I think the takeaway from that is when things are working well for you, enjoy the success. But then that's a good time to think long-term. That's a good time to make long-term bets because you have the room and the flexibility to make that sort of long-term bets. But surely during tough time, you would have to be a lot more practical. You have to think short-term and think about all the decision a lot more carefully. You would have to consider the ROI of everything you do. But doing good times when the time when you can follow your vision a bit and look further away and invest into more fundamental values that would be there no matter what. So we are doing a lot more of that now. We encourage long-term thinking. We encourage investment into things that don't show immediate impact right away. But I think we could have done that a lot earlier when the market was very favorable for us to afford that kind of patience, that the kind of long-term thinking and investment usually require. But back then, things look so easy. So a lot of people are just rushing into the area when you can get the most amount of growth and so on.
It's a good learning. Now you know, new pandemic, bring it on.
I think maybe the next golden age for startup and for tech would come in different size and shape. Doesn't require pandemic for that, hopefully. But when things go well, I think don't just chase the number, you know, don't just chase the next funding round. Also think about investing in fundamental.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one. All right. So the last question is always about a hack, right? And again, it can be anything, something that team thrives with, something that you really like, something that helps you on a personal level to be a better founder, something that you think others will benefit from.
Okay. So during our first 2 years, back in 2019, 2020, we did a lot of hacks. Actually, I call us all growth hackers. So back then, everything we did was hacks. And some of those hacks worked really well for us. But that was 5 years ago. So I'm not quite sure whether they'll be relevant now. So I guess I'm going to share the kind of hacks that we learned recently. But I think they're probably more suitable for teams that are a bit past that early stage and they want to grow to the next stage. And I think one of the things I could share is with product, you got to choose your customer wisely and then be very close to them. So the being very close to customer part is something that I think probably every team knows. You got to bring all your users into early testing, into your daily conversation, even become their friends to know their problem and share their pains. But the first step is to pick them carefully first. Because if you don't pick them carefully, you may end up getting contradicting views from different customers, different users. So you've got to be very careful about picking the right ICP. And once you pick the right ICP, then you bring them in. Yes. That picking involves, I think, it's a mix of data-driven decisions and also follow your heart to see what use case and what customer you want to serve. But be very careful and be very deliberate about picking the right ICP. Obviously, you want to serve all users who come to your product, but you've got to pick an ICP. And once you pick an ICP, you become their best friend. You bring them into their life. You even you sponsor them to travel to your office, get to know them and try to observe their life and make sure that you build a product that they cannot live without. So that's, I think that's fairly doable task when it comes to product that I could share. With growth, I think positioning matter a lot. So it's similar to the first advice there. You got to be deliberate about your positioning and you got to make a bet there. You just cannot be everything everywhere all at once. You got to choose your angle. You got to choose the area where you must win and you have conviction about it and stick with it. But this makes everything else so much easier. It gives you your own team and yourself clarity when it comes to growing the product. And for early stage company, nowadays, a lot of channels that work very well for us 5 years ago. I'm not sure whether they're still effective. For example, SEO is a channel that I would recommend to anyone 5 years ago, but nowadays, I'm not quite sure. But I think one thing that for early stage team to do well is viral to onboarding, to add that virality into everything you do. Starting from the very first thing that your user sees is the onboarding process. So we think about how once you get one user in, how that user bring in another user for you. And that's the question that you should keep on top of your mind for every decision you do. Because for a small team with not a lot of resource, I think that's the best way to grow your initial user base, to have that variety into everything, every decision that you make. One user must bring in another user into the product. And I think if you stick to that and you try a lot and you experiment a lot, you'll figure it out. And I think it's a much better way to invest your time and money and resource than spending on, you know, other acquisition channels like ads and so on. That is something for later. But early on, focus on making sure that the product has a, you know, an intrinsic virality quality in it. And one thing I want to mention is with growth, I mentioned that positioning is important. I think nowadays and in the next couple of years, AI is going to play a much bigger role in shaping the buyer decisions, because people already refer to AI with a lot of things that they buy nowadays, right? So the thing with AI is it likes clarity. So if you search for your entire, it scan through your entire website and scan through all the different sources that will talk about you, and it cannot figure out exactly what you're about and what you believe in and what kind of problem you can solve, then it would not give that answer to your potential future users. So you want to give clarity to AI, and the best way to do that is to have clarity within your team and yourself about the positioning of your product, and make no ambiguity about your ICP, your use cases, your strength, and so on. So that, I think that's really helped with what they call, you know, optimization for AI. Yeah, and probably one more, I don't know whether it's qualified as a hack, but one thing for your team is to stay fit, because I mean, working in software and tech and startup is a very tiring, it takes a lot of mental energy from you. So make sure that you stay fit, you exercise, just don't spend the whole time, you know, working, you know, have to go outside, do something, and make sure that you fit, go out for a run, play some sport. I don't know whether it's a hack or not, but I think it's really helpful. I think I would like to see, like with our team, I'd like to see us having other hobbies, other things to do. That's really helpful with success at work.
That's true. You know what? I always look out of my window and the staff at the local supermarket, when they come to work around 6:30, they blast music outside and they start like the Zumba kind of workout all together. And I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. And, you know, random people going to work sometimes join them. But I think like it's just so easy to be fit in Vietnam because everyone's super fit. And that's kind of one more advantage to move here. It was so funny when I first moved, and like, you know how hot it can get here. I was like, okay, I'm going to be like this superwoman. I'm going to go for a run at 5 a.m. And, you know, I'm going to be the only one there, and I'm just going to run along the sea. It's going to be amazing. And I walk to the sea at 5 a.m. and people are already leaving. I'm like, okay, I suck. Everyone finished already. I overslept. So I think it's a really good piece of advice, but also to everything else that you just mentioned. Yeah, maybe not really a hack or not really hacks, but it's really good for, like you said, sustainable growth and focusing on something a bit more long-term. And even though it doesn't like qualify as a hack maybe, but it's something that a lot of founders seem to kind of divert from time to time, just because it's not as shiny, you know? Let's all do AI now and let's call ourselves AI powered, AI native and whatnot. But I think just focusing on the fundamentals and the way you said it, you know, building a great team, making sure you're close to your customers, this is a lot more important. So yeah, thanks so much for sharing that. That's wonderful. You. And, you know, I really enjoy the conversation and the story, and hopefully we do it again next year to see where you are and how much more or less maybe AI is in a hospitalized.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for all the questions. I found them to be super interesting and thought-provoking.
Awesome. All right. I'm glad. Well, thank you so much for your time. And take care.
Thank you, Anna. Take care. Bye-bye.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders. And if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.